Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, latch on to the affirmative, don't mess with Mr. In-Between. You gotta spread joy up to the maximum, bring gloom down to the minimum, have faith. A pandemonium liable to walk upon the scene.
Welcome to Blog Talk Radio, and thank you for tuning in to another edition of Positively Affirmative. This is the show where we affirm you, our listening audience, with education, information, and resources in the areas of self-care, career development, business building, and wealth consciousness challenges and solutions. I am your host, Katrina Jones, Prosperity Life Coach of Satari Life Skills Institute, along with your co-host, Monica Renee, and I would say of Topics and Issues, but Monica is going to be doing a new show. So along with your co-host, Monica Renee. Hey, Monica, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you, Katrina?
I'm good. And what's the name of your show going to be called? I forgot, Monica.
The show is going to be called The World According to Monica Renee, and it's airing on Voice It Radio, and that's premiering February 16th at 8 p.m.
Yay! Okay. All right. Awesome. Well, Monica, today I'm very excited. We have a special guest, Jacqueline Warren. And Jackie, I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. And, you know, Jackie, as she's known to her family and friends, is a 48-year-old African-American female. She's married, has two adult children and two grandchildren. She has a career in the healthcare industry, and she enjoys what she does for a living. What makes Jackie unique is that she's lived with mental illness all her life. You see, her father has a diagnosis of mental illness and has lived with bipolar, manic depression, and schizophrenia with homicidal tendencies ever since Jackie can remember. Jackie, she's going to invite us today on her journey through living with a parent who has mental illness. She will discuss the fear, the fears, anger, disappointments, confusion, and often shame that clouds the lives of those who suffer with mental illness as well as those who are in their world. We will learn how she has had to find resources and safe accommodations for her father as he progresses through the aging stages of his life. And she will also share with us some self-help tips that has helped her to maintain her stability and basically her sanity, you know, throughout this relationship and journey that she's taken with, you know, with her dad. So, Jackie, thank you for being on our show today.
Again, just so excited to be here.
Thank you, Jackie. And, you know, I thought that this would be a really good show topic because, you know, there are so many families who have loved ones who have mental health issues and often feel isolated, often feel like they have no voice, they have nowhere to turn. And, you know, you and I have known each other for some time, and I just have appreciated you sharing your story and your journey through the ups and downs of you know, living with someone with mental illness. And I just really believe, I've always believed, and I do believe that your story can help a lot of our listeners. So, Jackie,
yeah,
I want to start off. I'm sorry, Monica.
I agree with that, because a lot of people that actually have loved ones that suffer from mental illness, they don't really understand it. So, Jackie, I'm really thankful for you doing this show with us today. I really am.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. Katrina, were you about to ask a question?
Yeah, I want to start off by asking you to tell us a little bit about yourself.
I am a very positive Black woman. I try to, you know, give positive words of encouragement and wisdom to others as I go through life, this journey called life. But I, as you've already told the audience, I have two adult daughters and I have two grandsons. I'm married and I work in the healthcare field and I'm trying to pursue my education to be a little more effective in human service management in the community.
Okay, Jackie. So I'm going to ask you this question because the show is about you know, mental illness. When did you recognize that something was different about your father? When did you first recognize it?
The very first memory that I have is when I was about 5 or 6 years old, and I remember my father being away from the household for I don't know how many days, but he was coming home, and it was Christmas, and he was coming home for a stay just for that day, and so that's my first memory, because when he came home, I knew it was like it wasn't my dad. It was someone else. But that was the first time I had ever seen him on medication.
And, you know, when and how did you find out exactly, you know, what your father's condition or diagnosis was?
I want to say around 1992, I became more just hungry for knowledge. I had just moved back to Cleveland, and my father had another family because he and my mom divorced when I was a teenager. But he was starting a new family, and he was not taking his medication when I moved back up here. And so I decided at that point that I wanted to become more knowledgeable about, you know, the condition he had, and to try to help him. That was my initial, you know, that's what I wanted to do in the beginning. And then as I started speaking with his physicians and case managers, social workers, I realized that I could not, you know, it wasn't something that was going to go away. But I wanted to have as much information around this subject as possible so that I could help him help himself.
Okay, so Jackie, when your dad's behavior actually started to change and you noticed something was wrong, how was it living in the home with them at that time?
Well, when I was growing up, you know, I knew there was something wrong. My mother and other close relatives, grandparents and aunts and uncles used to always say he would have a nervous breakdown. And he would go to the VA hospital in Brecksville, and he would be gone for like sometimes like a few weeks, sometimes months. But prior to him getting to the hospital when he wasn't taking his medication, you know, you could have be having a very normal moment. He was a big practical joker. He liked to play jokes on people. So you may be in the midst of a practical joke, and what would normally be funny, he's looking at you with a straight face, and he's not laughing, and then would come to fear because you never knew from that point where his behavior was going to take us all. You know, we just never knew. Sometimes mm-hmm. there was violence. He didn't really display physical violence against me or my brother in the household, but he and my mom did have some issues sometimes. It wasn't often, but he would just become very belligerent, and everything was, if you said turn left, he said turn right, and then he would, you know, take you on this sermon almost as to tell you why, and then you would realize that as he's talking, he's not making logical sense. You know, his stories just don't add up, you know, and it was just very, it was fearful, you know, because you just, and I didn't realize it while I was going through it. It was just what we did to get through it until a lot of times my mom would have to call some of his male relatives, cousins, or, you know, whatnot to come and take him to the hospital. You know, she always would try to talk him into going on his own. But if he resisted and became belligerent, you know, verbally with her, then she would know, okay, he's not going to go on his own. I have to call somebody to try to get them to take him, you know. And there were a few occasions where the police were involved, you know, because he would just act out so badly. And most of the time back then it was at home. It wasn't so much out in public. At least if it was, I didn't know about it. So that's what it was like growing up.
So it sounds like, and I hear you saying that your dad was in and out of the hospitals. In what ways did your dad's hospital visits affect you as you were growing up?
I was angry. I was embarrassed. But more than anything else, I think I was sad because, you know, being the firstborn, I guess, we had a very, very close relationship, so I had seen him at his best. And then to turn around and see him so low at his worst, you know, where he was totally not in control being medicated, you know, it was very conflicting, very conflicting. All those emotions would come on me sometimes at the same time, sometimes, you know, at different times. I didn't know how to explain to my friends that my father wasn't home, you know, and wasn't going to be home for weeks. You know, I just didn't, so I just tried to keep the secret as long as I could.
Okay. Well, let me ask you this, Jackie. But, you know, you only get one father, you only get one mother, and you love them no matter whatever it is that they're going through. But how did your father's behavior over the years affect your relationship with, like, your paternal family?
It was strange because we were a very close-knit family. My grandmother had nine siblings, so there were 10 of them. And, you know, of course, they're extended families. And we used to get together periodically quite often. But as I became, I want to say, like, teenager, maybe 12, 13, I just felt different, and I don't know if it was me or that I had reason to feel that way, but I felt different at those settings because, especially if it was during a time where my father was on medication and a lot of the family wasn't used to seeing him that way, or if he was right on the verge of, you knew he had stopped taking it, but he was still acting normal. He was cool. My father was just, he was always like, and I'm talking, I keep saying my father was, because during this time he was a certain way, but he just doesn't revisit that anymore. But he is well and alive. But it was just strange because you felt like it was this big elephant in the room and you don't know who all knows about it. And you feel like, you know, you being treated a little differently, like by first cousins. But really, I probably wasn't. But I felt that way, you know. And so it was always kind of tense because you always say, oh, God, what if they feel this way about him or what if they feel that way? And that was when I was younger. But as I became an adult, you know, we moved to Atlanta, Georgia when I was 15, and I came back, excuse me, I want to say I was about 28, 29. And when I came back, I tried to reconnect with a lot of that family that was still here. And over the years, because my father, at least this is how I felt, over the years, my father had a lot of incidents where family was involved and, you know, it wasn't a very positive environment. And you, I just didn't know how they felt about it. And I talked to some, but it made for a little distance between us. And it's probably a combination of the fact of things my father has done over the years to the family members. And on top of the fact that I was not here for like 13, 14 years. So we were getting to know each other again, but it's still distant. You know, I can count on probably both my hands relatives that I'm comfortable around on that side of the family.
You know what, Jackie, as you're talking, I just want to, you know, take time again to say, you know, thank you so much for sharing your story. You know, because these are some really intimate and personal details that you're talking to us about. And I'm just really appreciative because as you're talking, it reminds me of the things that go on in families, you know, where there is dysfunction. You know, where there's dysfunction, you don't talk, you don't tell. You know, you just don't, you know, you it's the elephant, you know, you said it so eloquently. It's like the elephant in the living room and nobody wants to talk about it. Everybody sees it, but you know, nobody wants to talk about it. And I've shared with you that I just really believe that this interview is going to help. You know, there are people out here that feel isolated and alone, and you know, I do believe that this interview is just going to help a lot of people. But I want to ask you, Jackie, how has your father's condition affected your relationship with men?
Okay. I would say the best way to describe that would be when you grow up in an atmosphere where everything appears to be normal, but you know it's not normal, and you behave a certain way. When I first started having relationships with young men, guys or whatnot, I always was afraid of being abandoned. And I think that comes from every time my father would go in the hospital, you know, I would automatically have to shift my emotions, my behavior, things I say or certain things I could say, couldn't say, you know. And so I would always feel abandoned when he was gone. And even when he would come home when he was heavily medicated. And so when I started having relationships with men, I think I unintentionally sabotaged a few relationships because due to the fear of being abandoned, you know, it was more of a self-protective thing. Like, you know, well, he's doing this and he's doing that and I don't like that, so I'm just going to exit this relationship. I'm not going to try to solve it. I'm not going to try to figure out why it's affecting me the way it is. I'm just going to move on. And so I, you know, terminated some relationships early in my adult life that I probably, looking back now, at least would have liked to explore why certain behaviors were happening, you know. And I don't know. It's been a very rocky road in that area. But now that, and I would say it was that way for a long time until I realized that I had to figure out who Jackie was and what made Jackie. Why did I feel the way I felt in certain environments, especially with other men, with men? And so that has helped me identify certain things that, you know, it's given me my boundaries in relationships, because now I know why I do certain things or why I react a certain way. And so that has given me or has put me on the path to know what I want in a relationship and what I will tolerate and what I will not tolerate, you know. And then there's other things that I can honestly say to my mate or, you know, even in my relationships with my children. This is a problem I have. It's not your problem. It's my problem. But because I feel the way I feel or it makes me feel a certain way, I'm going to remove myself from the environment, you know. And essentially that's it. I took a long journey, you know, to get where I am today in relationships. Always wanted to be married. My parents were very happy for the most part, you know, and I always wanted to mimic that in my life. So I never gave up, you know, but here I am today, still standing.
Hmm. Okay, well, let me ask you this, Jack.
Wait a minute, Monica, before you go to the next question, I just want to comment on something that you said, Jackie, when you were talking about you had sabotaged a few relationships because of, you know, abandonment issues, and when you were talking, what I was hearing was, you know, I'm gonna get rid of you before you get rid of me, you know.
Exactly.
So that's interesting. And it's interesting that many of our childhood situations can bring in us or can allow us to develop abandonment issues.
Uh-huh.
So, you know, that I just wanted to comment on that. It's interesting. All right, Monica.
Okay, Jackie, I was going to ask you, you talked about, you know, how you dealt with some of the things that you went through with your dad's mental illness. I wanted to know, how did your mom deal with some of the episodes that your dad had?
You know, I would say I didn't really start paying attention to that until probably 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. My mother would become very withdrawn with everyone, you know, but she would try to be, what's the best word, be strong in her, in what she spoke to him, when she spoke to him verbally. She would try to be strong and get, you know, steer him in the right direction as far as, you know, getting some help. But then at the same time, she would withdraw. And, you know, the smiles, she was a person that laughed a lot, you know, all that would disappear. And it would become just strictly business, because I think for her, and, I, you know, she and I talked about this later in life, but for her it was more, okay, I don't have that rock, you know, I don't have that person to lean on. He's about to be where in the hospital or whatnot, so now I have to become strictly business because I have to hold things up and make things appear to be okay and to be okay as much as we possibly can until, you know, he comes back and goes through the medication phase and then gets to a point where he's leveled off. So she would flip back and forth with that. And I know, you know, I honestly can say I know that took a toll on her health. You know, she didn't take care of herself the way she should have, you know, and that's a whole other topic for a show. But she neglected herself, but she did everything she could to protect my brother and I. You know, we didn't deal with relatives a lot because my mother didn't like to tell lies, so it was easier for her just to not say anything, you know. And so we would all be kind of shut off from everybody during that time, you know. And I'm sure there were other reasons, but, you know, it was very difficult for her, very difficult.
Wow. And, you know, Jackie, I think you and I may have talked a lot about energy. And being able to recognize when our energy, you know, when your energy is high and when your energy is low. And I can only imagine that, you know, when you're dealing, you know, when you're dealing with someone who is, you know, unstable, that it takes a lot of energy. You know, it takes a lot of energy out of you. You know, just, you know, when I think of just taking care of kids and having a family and, you know, having a career and just those kind of, you know, day-to-day issues and how much energy it takes, you know, anything out of the ordinary, you know, I can only imagine that it saps even more energy than you would normally use, you know, and
it
then
does.
We don't have a way. And then I heard you speak of isolation. So a lot of times when you don't have those avenues to be able to reconnect or to get a refuge or a break, you know, you can, you know, it can, I can only imagine that it can emotionally, you know, deplete you, and how
it
could begin to affect other areas of your life, you know, like your health.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it does.
Wow.
It's very draining.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Jackie, can you share with us one of your most frightening incidents that you you know, experienced you know, dealing with you know, your dad and you know, his mental illness?
Oh, there are so many. I will tell you, there was an incident that happened in 1992. I had just moved back here from Atlanta with my two kids, and I was staying with my grandmother. And my father's girlfriend at the time was about to have their first child together. And they came over, my father, his girlfriend and her son came over to my grandmother's. And I don't know if I was there when they came. I think I was there when they came. But anyway, my father left. And so at the time, his girlfriend was about 7 or 8 months pregnant. And she, you know, you're pregnant, you're uncomfortable. She was ready to go home, but he wasn't back. And so I told her, I'll take you home. You know, it's no problem. And we got in the car. And as we were leaving going down my grandmother's street, my father was coming, you know, from the opposite direction. And at the time, I really didn't know for sure, because we weren't living together, whether he was taking his, you know, I didn't know what my idea of him. I think at that time I knew he wasn't taking medicine. But he hadn't really acted out around me, so no big deal. So we see him coming from the opposite direction. And I don't know, I can't remember if he motioned for us to pull over, but we pulled over, he turned around, and when he drove up, he just was telling his girlfriend to get out the car, and he started talking to us crazy and cussing, and we were both looking like, oh, no, you know. And so knowing that I've been living with this, I realized at that point that she had been dealing with it, you know, and the kind of effects it was having with her, and I just took off. I drove, and he chased us, and I drove all the way from East 79th and Cedar to 105, where they used to have a mini police station, and I pulled into that parking lot and just laid on the horn, and he came roaring in behind us. You know, he kind of tapped the car when he pulled in, but the police came running out, and I'm trying to explain to them, you know, my father, we've been on a, he's been chasing us, you know, through the city for the last however many minutes, but I don't know what he's capable of right now. And it was just really scary. And he gets out the car, and he's making all these accusations, and I'm begging them, please just take him to Wade Park or VA. Please just take him to the hospital. You know, don't take him to jail. Don't hurt him. Just take him to the hospital. But that was scary. And that was my first realization that he could hurt somebody or somebody can hurt him. And this can turn into a whole nother issue. You know, we could be talking assault, felonious assault, murder. I just don't know. And I was scared. I was probably the most afraid I had ever been around him, because growing up, you don't think to those extremes. But by this time, I'm, you know, I'm close to 30 years old, so I know what can happen. And it was scary. It was very scary. And that was the pivoting point for me, you know, and that's when I realized I got to get, I have to get help for him. And it's still not knowing what to do, but, you know, I started becoming very involved with his health care.
So that is very scary.
It is.
That is very, very scary. Very scary. Let me ask you this, Jackie. Now that your dad is older, how is he doing with the medications and the compliance of his behavior now? How is he doing now?
Well, he's taking medication because he's being made to take medication every day, but he had the opportunity about 7 years ago to do it on his own, in a, like in a group home setting, and he was totally non-compliant. He may have taken his medication for 3 weeks, maybe a month, and then right back to the same behaviors, you know, not taking the meds, and by the time, you know, you go through a whole another month or so before you actually realize he's not taking them because they've worn off now, and those medications are very, very, very strong. And so if you don't, the best way, I guess, to describe it, sometimes you get medicine, you have to wean yourself off of it. You can't abruptly stop taking it. These medications are often like that. And so because he's gone for years of being off and on, off and on, off and on, it has affected him physically. You know, he's not able to walk anymore. The muscles in his legs just don't work. He's had physical therapy, and, you know, he's done a lot of different things, but now he's just not able to, he's not ambulatory because of the noncompliance of the medication over the years, you know. And he's still delusional. I don't like them to keep him so doped up that he's not responsive. So, you know, we came to a medium where he can have medication enough to be social if he chooses to be. But, you know, he still has the delusions. So he's not taking his medication. He does have outbursts of negative behavior, you know, but he's in a nursing home setting now. So, you know, there are people there around the clock to watch him and monitor him and, you know, to deal with that.
And I know, Jackie, I remember when you were beginning to look for safe places for your dad to be so that he wouldn't hurt himself and he wouldn't hurt somebody else. And I can just remember that you had a hard time. You really, it was a struggle for you to really find the right type of environment that would really be able to accept him and that he would feel comfortable in. And I could just remember you having all these conflicting emotions and having to wear all of these different hats just with, you know, just with trying to, you know, just with being his caregiver at that point and trying to figure out, you know, where can I send him that he'll be safe? Where can I send him that he'll be happy? You know, where can I send him that, you know, that I know that he'll get, that, you know, he'll get the care that he needs. And, you know, I mean, there was just all these
questions that, you know, that you, you know, just had to search and search and search and search and find the answer to. And I just remember that particular journey. And, you know, it was just was not easy. You know, it was not easy. And the resources were not readily available to you. I remember that. I really remember that. And I say that because, you know, again, I know that there are a lot of people who are dealing with family members who have mental illness and, you know, just have no clue as to where to turn or what to do and do feel that isolation and despair and hopelessness. You know, there are people with children with mental illness. It's just rough. So on that note, Jackie, what advice would you offer to our listening audience who may have family, spouse, children, or friends with mental illness?
Oh, wow. There's so much. But I would start off by saying that, you know, the first thing to always try to remember and keep in the forefront is that they're human too. And no matter what type of behavior they're displaying, they have feelings, you know. But at the same time, if you have a family member or you know someone that you come in contact on a regular basis that has mental illness, educate yourself. Because that is so helpful with dealing with that person one-on-one. And when I say educate yourself, you know, there are books out there, you know, you can go to the library, but you can also get a lot of information from the Department of Health through Cuyahoga County or whatever county they may live in, through city community service organizations, the VA. You know, I was blessed enough that my father is a veteran, and so they have been, I can honestly say the people that I've worked with here recently have been very, very forthcoming with information and support. But try to be as patient as you can with the family member. You have to have some education, know what your limits are, what you can deal with, what you are not comfortable dealing with, you know, and to really try to make sure that they get the best care possible. You know, a lot of times people are not to the extreme that my father is. They may just show, you know, they just may have been diagnosed with one or the other. He happens to have like a very complex condition because of two or three diseases at once. And so when you're not to that extreme, it's harder to recognize sometimes. But people just really should be cognizant of what that person is capable of so that you don't put yourself in the position or, you know, not intentionally putting yourself in a position to be harmed in any way. It takes a lot of understanding, a lot of patience. You do have to wear a lot of hats because they will take you on a journey if they're delusional. You know, I found that it's easier to go on their journey with them than to try to pull them back into reality. That becomes an uncomfortable situation for all parties involved because they're going to deny it, and you're going to try to force them to believe something, and then it becomes argumentative, which is the last thing you want to do.
Okay, Jackie.
One more piece of advice. Can I add one more thing?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Try to keep a comical spirit about you. Try to laugh about as much as you possibly can. That helps me. That has helped me with my sanity by laughing about it, not in a derogatory way, but just keeping your humor about you. so that you can get through whatever you may be going through.
And I want you to talk a little bit about support systems, because one of the things I've always noticed about you, which I have found just absolutely amazing, is that, you know, you've always seemed to create for yourself a network of family and friends that you could kind of talk to and have in your life at different points, points in your life to be support systems. Can you talk a little bit to that?
I don't know why that, I don't know how that happens, but, you know, I don't really surround myself with a lot of people, but I can tell you that my stepmom has been truly very supportive, because there have been times when I knew I could not talk to anybody else that could truly identify, and she could always truly identify with that. And so there have been times when I've been on the brink of falling over that cliff, and I can pick up the phone and call her, and we will laugh about things, you know, and not laughing at him, but just laughing about how I react to him, to things, and, you know, that has helped me tremendously. And then I have great friends, you know, who, now that I speak about it openly, you know, they know or, you know, have some kind of idea of what I'm dealing with. And so they do support me by just letting me vent or talk or, you know, get things off my chest. And when I'm trying to get things in order, I have been blessed to have good people around me that will kind of steer me in the right direction. My children have been super supportive. They know, you know, I've had to talk with them about my dad, and they've even witnessed it. You know, he stayed with us on separate occasions where they've been up close with it. And so, you know, they deal with it pretty good, and they help me deal with it. My husband is very supportive. That's never been uncomfortable for me, and this is probably the first relationship that I've had as an adult where my father's condition was not uncomfortable as far as me and my mates. And my mother, my mother was very, when I moved back to Cleveland and first began, you know, questioning his doctors and trying to figure out the best way to help him. My mother was the guiding force. There were times when I have been in the emergency room with him at the VA, and he's acting a certain way, and I could pick up the phone and call her, and she would tell me exactly how I needed to behave to calm him down. And that was amazing to me, because it had been years since she had dealt with it, but she knew that I was insistent on dealing with it as much as she tried to protect me and my brother from it. She knew that I was insistent on dealing with it, and she wanted somebody to be that way with him, because even though they weren't together anymore, she still loved him. You know, I think that was hard for her. But she would guide me on how to deal with him, how to calm him down, how to get him in the mood to be agreeable to things that were helpful for him. So it's been amazing. And then there have been family members, you know, others from his family that are supportive. You know, when my grandmother passed away, his mom, my cousin was here from Atlanta, and she rode with me to the nursing home to pick my dad up, and we initially were just going to get him for a viewing, but the weather was really bad, and another cousin, one of his male first cousins, rode with us, and when we got down there, we realized we were going to have to keep him for the night and actually take him to the service, which was something we did not plan on. But they were very supportive. You know, we went and rented a hotel suite. We kept my father in the adjoining suite. his cousin, you know, undressed him and dressed him and everything, but we kept him company, me and my cousin Kathy, and it was just a very good time, and I was just so amazed and humbled by their support. It was never a thought that they were going to help me. You know, I didn't really have to ask. I was like, I need to go get Dad, and they just jumped right on board. Okay, when we leave him, let's go, you know, and that was great. That was great. So I'm very thankful. I'm very thankful, but it also makes me realize everybody doesn't have the support that I have, which is one of the reasons I'm very open about talking about it, because you never know. It could be the person right next to you dealing with the same situation, but they don't want to talk about it. But once you open up, you know, it becomes okay. It makes them feel more comfortable. And that's also a reason that I have decided to write a book. And I'm working on that as we speak.
Okay, and we're going to ask you about that, Jackie. We're going to ask you about that. But I want to, you know, I want to kind of reiterate the importance of having a support network. And you were fortunate, you know, you are fortunate enough, you have been fortunate in your journey that you've had a network from time to time of you know, people who kind of helped you through your journey. But I do want, you know, our listeners or those who may be struggling, you know, with this issue to know that there are support groups for families,
yes,
you know, who have loved ones with mental illness, and you know, you mentioned earlier, you know, the Department of Health is a good resource, a good way to find out about programs in your area. A lot of cities have a mental health department, but in just about every city and state, or city and or province, because you know we may have listeners, you know, listening in different countries.
Right.
You know, in most areas, there are places, you know, public health places that do, you know, provide some type of resources and support. And support.
That's true.
Now, and I just want to.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead, Jackie.
This today is a lot different than it was 10 years ago, 20 years ago, even 30 years ago. You can pretty much contact any health care provider and start inquiring. Most providers now have an arm for behavioral health, and mental illness does fall under that. So it is very accessible. It's much more accessible today than it used to be. That was all I wanted to say.
Okay, great.
Okay, Jackie, I just wanted to say there's a lot of our listeners out there who is going through something with a close family member, whether it be mental illness, maybe a drug issue or any other type of issue. So I just wanted to ask you, what type of things have you done to take care of yourself over the years?
I definitely have become more spiritual over the years. That has helped me tremendously. I've gotten to know myself a lot better. You have to know how to take time out for you. No matter how many other people depend on you, I found that the sooner you take time out for you, the better you are, and therefore the better you can be for others. You can be a good support for others. I've learned to get massages, you know, on a regular basis. And just, you know, you have to take that time to just get away, you know. And also the support, you know, the support is tremendous.
Okay.
There's so many things, yeah, but those are the main things that I've done to help myself.
Okay. All right. And so, Jackie, you are in the process of journaling and putting your thoughts on paper for purposes of writing a book of your experiences.
And that's something that I'm very excited about. But I would like you to share a bit of that with us.
Well, actually, over the years, you know, a lot of conversations I've had with you and others has kind of prompted me to tell this story. The primary reason, you know, would be for others to get a gauge on, you know, different ways to deal with it. It's a very stressful situation. But also, you know, just being happy that it's okay to talk about today, you know. I would hate for this to be happening 60 years ago or 70 years ago when it wasn't okay to talk about it. But, yeah, I've been journaling. It's actually been over some years, a couple of years. But I'm getting closer and closer to the point where I'm ready to allow others to read it and, you know, start my journey and search for a publishing company. But, you know, it's also very meditative for me, just telling the story. It's like a cleansing, you know. It just feels so good to be able to share it finally, because for so many years it was something you didn't want to share.
Wow. Well, Jackie, I know that I, for one, am looking forward, you know, to you writing this book based on your experiences, and I know that it's going to be a great resource, again, for others who feel in the dark, who feel that fear, who feel that isolation, who feel that embarrassment and that shame, you know, that comes with, you know, having a loved one again with mental illness. And I'm glad to hear you say that, you know, it's okay to talk about it. You know, it's
yes.
Okay to take care of yourself. You know, it's okay to get the support that you need. And then I appreciate you sharing that story with us, your story with us. I appreciate that. So, Jackie, are there any last words that you'd like to leave with our audience today?
Just, you know, I want to reiterate those qualities that it takes to be able to handle that, something, you know, or someone in your family or someone you know, always remember to be very patient and try to educate yourself as much as possible, you know, to exactly what they're going through, because they are human and they do have feelings, you know. Their personalities play a big part in the direction that their illness goes, but just love them.
Thank you, Jackie. All right, Monica, any last words, Monica?
No, I think you summed it up pretty well, Katrina.
Okay, great.
Thank you so much, Jackie, for joining us, sharing your story with us, and actually giving advice to the listening audience that may be going through the same thing. I just wanted to say thank you, Jackie.
Thank you, Monica. Thank you very much. Your questions were very insightful, and I just thank you both for the opportunity to be able to share this, and I hope that someone's listening that, you know, can relate and take some of this to heed, and it'll help them.
Okay, and we'd love to invite you back when you write that book.
Okay. That's the deal.
Okay. All right. Well, we are going to bring this edition of Positively Affirmative to a close, and we'd like to thank you, our listening audience, for tuning in to another edition of Positively Affirmative. This is the show where we affirm you with education, information, and resources in the areas of self-care, career development, business building, and wealth consciousness
challenges, and solutions. If you like our show, spread the good news and tell a friend. You can also email us with topics you'd like to hear about at kjones@prosperitylifecoach.com. Join us again next Sunday at 6:30 p.m. I am your host, Katrina Jones, Prosperity Life Coach of Satari Life Skills Institute, along with your co-host, Monica Renee, of, what is the name of your new show, Monica?
Don't worry. I thought you was going to say Topics and Issues.
Say that again, Monica.
It's called World According to Monica Renee.
The World According to Monica Renee. And we can view your show where?
VoiceOfRadio.com.
Okay. And what when will you be airing?
That's going to air February 16th. And that's a Saturday at 8 p.m.
Okay. And your show is internet-based, is that correct?
Yes, like a serious radio.
Okay, great. All right, everybody. Jackie, have a great week and abundant blessings to you.
And the same to you.
Thank you. And Monica, you have a great week also, okay?
You too.
Okay, blessings.
Blessings.
Don't mess with Mr. In Between. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.